you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
I'm Austin Cross. Join me for LAist's new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of LA restaurants. The kickoff event is May 22nd. Tickets at LAist.com/events.
LAist Studios.
Thanks to our amazing partners at KCET. My name is Antonia Cerejido. I am the host of a podcast we have here called Imperfect Paradise. We have a season called Nuri and the Secret Tapes about the LA City Council scandal, if you have a little moment to be enraged these days. I'm going to introduce our amazing panel. Rebecca Zamora is an independent scholar and arts professional. She has published Preserving a Legacy, Shifra Goldman and David Alfaro Siqueiros America Tropical in Getty Research Journal, and Siqueiros and Los Angeles, A Legacy Interrupted. Then, yes, clap. Oscar Magallanes is a Los Angeles-based artist specializing in painting, sculpture, and mixed media, drawing inspiration from his Mexican-American upbringing in East Los Angeles. He is a co-founder of the 3B Collective, which focuses on large-scale, site-specific public works. And finally, Jose Luis Figueroa is a co-founder of Dignicraft, the production company behind this film. Dignicraft is a documentary film and collaborative art collective founded in Tijuana in 2013. Okay, so my first question is for you, Jose Luis. How did this movie come about, and what was your research process?
We've been collaborating with KCT for around 10 years now, and every time they have a project or like who might be about the Mexican American history, Chicano history, migration, they ended up like looking and asking us to do something. So just recently, around last year, like at the end of last year, they invite us to collaborate with them, and they commissioned this documentary. And the process was, well, immediately we totally accepted, no, the commission, because who might like who's doing filmmaking will deny to do a piece about Siqueiros, and we are very interested about his work, and being from Mexico, it's an honor to be able to tell his story. And also immediately came this interaction that we had with Shifra Goldman 20 years before, doing an interview for a show that we used to produce in Tijuana, Mexico, called Bulbo. And we were doing a documentary about contemporary art, and we came to Los Angeles to interview Shifra Goldman, and it was very, we just got impressed about her commitment to this mural. Mm-hmm. So that immediately popped up, and then we started like just following all the networks that you create after doing documentaries for a few years. So we start like getting back to people that we knew, like Luis Garza, and then we stumbled with an article about Siqueiros and Shifra Goldman and an interpretation about the America Tropical mural wrote by Rebecca, and we knew Rebecca from another project that we did a few years ago. So we start like connecting with them and start this conversation about this moment of Siqueiros' time in Los Angeles.
I have a clarifying question, which is, so when you see the mural today, it is that, what exactly are we seeing? So it was that when they stopped taking off the paint, like what, what moment of...
The mural is conserved in terms of stabilize the material that it's made of, and but it's as it is. It was impossible to restore, and basically what you see is a phantom of the image. It's like the first part of the image, like the base of the mural. That is, all the details are quite lost. So we have this reference that we see these old photographs that are mostly black and white photos. So you can see the mural, but if you stand in front of it, it's basically a phantom of the image. But what is interesting is the materials. If you go close to the materiality, it's as Siqueiros stated, modern fresco. It was made of cement. Instead of arcilla y cal, no? Sorry. So you can see that materiality of mm-hmm. the mural. It's thick and you can see the texture. So it's very incredible.
Uh-huh. Rebecca, I really like the part in the film where you say that you like that they stopped restoring it and that it's in its ghostly state. How did America Tropical enter your life? When did you become interested in the mural?
Well, I was lucky in that I went to undergrad school at UCLA and I was introduced to the Tres Grandes in art history class. And I also worked at the Getty part-time, and I realized that there was this overlap of what I was learning about only in slides, and especially about... this idea that they were taking and they could try to restrict this artist by thematically getting this mural within a beer garden, and that they thought that they would be able to control him when he was politically exiled from Mexico. So it was just, and he had already had a previous mural. So for me, what was interesting was the idea that the city thought they could control, that money could control this artist that had been expelled from his own country.
So Christine Sterling knew that, or the people who commissioned the mural knew, like, Siqueiros' political history?
Yes, it was well known why he was in Los Angeles. And even when he got here, as they said in the documentary, he came from Taxco. He came, I believe Chouinard was actually in Taxco, so she knew why he was there and still allowed him to do the workshops and the collective actions that he was able to do in Chouinard. And then they still thought that he must need the money, so he will completely subscribe to what they wanted him to do. And technically he did. He gave them the Tropical of America. Yeah.
He got them so good. It's so satisfying. You're like, wow, he really shoved it in their face. What is Christine Sterling's like deal? Like, who is she? Like, why is she like that? Like, what's up?
So Christine Sterling is actually not her real name. Her real name is Chestina Ricks. She changed her name when she got to L.A. She has written her own story. You can find it at the main public library, which is how I read her story. She went looking for the Mexico and Spain that she had been taught on the orange crates, on all the advertisements. She went looking for that old world spirit.
But she had no connection to Mexico. She would just like saw a poster and was like...
I believe she was from San Francisco. And from the Midwest previously, she had recently been divorced. So she was a single woman, a mother. And that's actually a kind of a trajectory for a lot of the monuments and kind of nation building projects that were happening in the 30s at the same time. It was strongly led by women. She went in, she found the Avila Adobe, and she was very, very disappointed, she said, that she... did not find the Mexico she thought she was going to find, that it was derelict. And it was, I believe, going to be destroyed and razed. So she started the campaign that was largely unsuccessful until she attracted the attention of LA Times owners, the Chandlers, and then other city boosters. And they started not a for-profit company, and to kind of create their new version of Mexico in right near Union Station, which Henry Chandler had heavily advocated to put right near his new LA Times building. So it was all about city building, sanitizing what was there. The plaza was also a area for protest and for free speech, repatriation, and sending rounding up of Mexicans were also happening during the 30s as a result of many different types of programs. So for them to create this idea of Mexico really worked for them. The idea of a sanitized, this is the kind of official history that they would want to engage instead of the history that was living at the plaza. And so this is where Christine Sterling kind of enters in. And just, again, it's the perfect coincidence of all these interests coming to life.
Wow, that's so interesting. Oscar, I want to know, could you tell us a little bit more about 3B Collective and what y'all do?
So we're an art collective that focuses on site-specific art installations, so large-scale murals. And we work a lot with institutions, as we've seen. There's been, the history of erasure, right? And so coming from different neighborhoods, from Los Angeles, from South Central, from Pico Union, I'm from San Gabriel Valley, some of the first things we saw were murals and graffiti. That was really our first exposure to art. And so that's part of the history that we grew up with, the cultural heritage that we carry with us. And the collective met in undergrad. It was 5 members, I think. Almost everybody's here. But we met in undergrad, and it's the same narrative in art schools, where a lot of the idea of what we think of as art revolves around white male artists. And really the history for us goes back thousands of years as far as frescoes. You know, not even though we do murals, it's not something that's inspired from this European kind of tradition. It comes from Mayans and, you know, the Mexica, like Mesoamerican cultures. And so that's all reflected in the work that we do as far as being able to have these works that are not locked behind some gallery door or something where it's very much accessible to the community.
When did Siqueiros enter your life?
Very early on. I was kicked out of school when I was 15, and I immediately got insomnia. So I would stay up and watch like PBS and KCET, because I just couldn't sleep, right? So like at 2 a.m, 3 a.m, I would watch these documentaries on artists, and it was the only way that I mean, the library in our community was terrible, and I couldn't just Google anything back then. And so there was this documentary on America Tropical, and that stuck with me. That was something that was very poignant as far as not just erasure, but because, I mean, we saw things get erased in the community all the time, but the idea of the politics that Siqueiros had, who he was as a person, and the ability to use this artwork as a weapon, even after it was erased, the narrative that I had and the power that I had, especially with the reviving of the mural movement by the Chicanos, because muralism was pretty much dead, and it was the Chicanos who revived it. But it's also important to remember that legacy of when people first, instead of going from the Americas to Europe to study art, the first time that they came to study art in the Americas was in Mexico. After the Mexican Revolution, and there's this narrative that's been erased in because of the politics, because of the very much trying to rave this, bring everybody together, because even, you know, La Placita at that time, it was, everybody was there. It wasn't just Mexicans. And it was really about creating this false narrative about the missions being the foundation of California, instead of it being, you know, a lot of those missions were burned down by the indigenous people, you know, and the workers, and that fight between these labor and capitalistic really movements.
Jose Luis, okay, this is a bit, one of the things that I was thinking about while watching the film was this idea of like, what is restoration and how should things be restored? I'm curious, when you were working on the film, there's a lot of scenes where we see people working to restore the murals. Like, what were you hoping to get at in talking about how to restore a mural, what it means to restore a mural?
We, It was an opportunity to see the opening scene where you see these people from the Getty and the city and the pueblo like doing this monitoring of America Tropical. It's something very interesting for us because it was in the present. No, it's something you can see in present time, and we start like we were interested in the connections with the mural to the present. So that was the first like entrance to connect the mural with what is happening now. And then the other approach was through artists, you know, to start like seeing how Siqueiros came in 1932 with pretty much in an avant-garde way of art making. He was many things as in the documentary we saw. No, he used different hats and he wasn't constrained about just being an artist. He was many things, and so we start like trying to see that what he was doing at that time was. We see it normal now. It's very common to see artists that are multidisciplinary in that way. But at that time, it was something really new. So through that connections, we start like talking about the collective way of doing art. He was a very vocal and advocating for collective art making. We were also talking about seeing these connections between the artist and master and apprentice way of teaching art. No, he was also promoting that all the technical revolution that he was promoting is so common now. But you see these connections. So we were interested in the connections between that period and the present, and also this legacy of in the American culture of erasing things, no, mm-hmm. to censor what is different, and for us it's interesting to see how the mural is still very relevant today. That image is so powerful even today. If you go to Fresno, California, if you go to this region of agricultural regions in California, you still see that. Abuses on indigenous farm workers, no. So it's not that it's still here. So it's important to keep talking about it. No? Mm-hmm. So for us,
okay. Last question before we go to the audience for Oscar and Rebecca, the same question, which is the film at the end poses this. It says it's still open ended. What Siqueiros' legacy is, and how his work has impacted Los Angeles. But where do you see his legacy in the city today?
I'll take a stab. I mean, I think his legacy is that it continues to live on, that, you know, Judy was a student of his. I was able to take a class with her as well, and to keep learning the techniques, the most important, not just the technical innovations, but the collective work, the way that they pass on the knowledge. I think that is the true legacy for Siqueiros. The object itself, I still find beautiful, even in its phantom sight. I know that the Alvaro Street is also having issues at the moment, so I'm curious as to if that has any impact on how people can view the mural. But I think the legacy for Siqueiros is the way in which he passed down knowledge, the way in which he kept his craft going and kept not just the technical aspects, but imbuing his political life, his social life within his artwork.
I think to really think about the collaborative work is important, of course, working with a collective, but there's something that is inherently, the idea of creating work that defies commodification in a very capitalistic world, a very hyper-individualistic world, something like the art world. I think that to have that counter with Siqueiros and America Tropical and all these other murals that are created, and to be in this time where we're really having that discussion of who's responsible for these works. And so for us as a collective also. I think that's something that we've learned from Siqueiros is how do we work with the institutions to ensure the longevity of these works.
So much. Right. Yeah. Any questions from the audience? Yeah.
I have a mic. Can you stand up?
Absolutely. I noticed in the film, I remember my mom brought a restorer from Mexico City who was the, and he's in this film. There's a short shot of him examining it. I remember when she brought him up. And he probably most understood the techniques. And I know that they felt that they could do it. But it was the 30 years of unable to get help, unable to get funding. It was just a constant frustration of she assembled people and people in Mexico that could do this. And it just could never happen. So it was 30, 40 years of incredible frustration on Schiffer's part. But I saw the picture and I go, oh, I remember. I remember her picking him up at the airport. And I remember going out there and the discussions they would have in the living room about, we can do this. We understand the technique. And I also remember, I think I sent you guys the photograph that when I met Siqueiros, I think it was in 1971, and the picture that I took. And, you know, meeting this man and just feeling incredible power, yet the graciousness and the bigness and the look in his eyes, you know, of this person you know is just brimming with genius. And so, it, you know, watching this brought back. I didn't remember the clip of my mom so young interviewing him. It's sort of, oh my God. So thank you for doing all this.
And she promoted that, the production of that film, actually. It was also, she was very involved in the production. And I am assuming that it is the film that you saw when you couldn't sleep because it's...
Nice full circle moment.
Hi, guys. Well, I know you guys probably study a lot of Siqueiros' work, not just this one. So my question to you is, do you think Siqueiros will paint the same American tropical today?
Before he died, he was painting, it wasn't a replica, it was a reinterpretation of America Tropical back in La Tallera in Cuernavaca. It was, the mural was in panels, and the idea was to bring those panels back to LA as a gift to the city, because he thought that this mural couldn't be restored. But as a gesture to the city, and he was painting pretty much the same theme with certain differences, but it he couldn't finish it because he died in between doing that. So I will say that he might paint something similar. What I admire a lot is this really this. Como he was very, very valiente. He was
brave
on saying what he saw, not really constrained himself in any way. And being like, he was struggling in money wise, and this commission, I'm assuming that he earned money through it, and that doesn't stop him to say what he had to say. No, so I will argue that he might paint
something.
Did they
pay him?
From what I understand, it was a fresco class that they were offering, so he did get a portion, but it wasn't a huge commission. He had other ways he was trying to make money while he was here as well. He was selling paintings that he had made while he was under house arrest as well. But agree, I think he would have made, to also add to your question, he would have made the mural, but if it was resituated now and he was still alive, I think it would be even more strident. I think it would be a very different picture of what imperialism looks like in the U.S. and in Latin America, and how different types of imperialisms are still active.
Yeah. Scott, do you want to? No. Okay. Any other questions?
Wow. I grew up and I was born in East LA, and I really admire the murals. Well, I mean, for a long time, I just really dismissed them because they were always on my walks and on my car rides. But what really trips me out is that Philip Guston and Jackson Pollock, two major cornerstones of American art, were students of this man, Siqueiros. I really admire that Jackson Pollock basically grew or broke the ice of American 20th century art. How do you guys feel that? I mean, I didn't see it on this film, but I mean, I know he influenced a lot of Chicanos, but he influenced two major players in American art, and they weren't really discussed within this. I think you mentioned Cuernavaca, and I think Philip Guston traveled to Cuernavaca, and he also did a mural from the U.S. He went to Mexico to do a mural in Cuernavaca. So I'm just curious as to what do you guys feel about, like, Siqueiros influencing, like, the course of American history art? I mean, Jackson Pollock with his little blobs, and I mean, he used enamel paint because Siqueiros was using car paint to produce this. So I'm just curious as to what you guys feel about that, you know?
Just to put it out there, it wasn't just Siqueiros who, I mean, there was a huge amount of Mexican artists that influenced, and not just that, but indigenous artists as well. If you, even up until current times, if you look at anything like Michael Heiser or all the, like, you look at Terrell, James Terrell, like, very much influenced by, like, the Kivas and the ceremonies that were held in the Southwest. And that's erased from the history. So, of course, Jackson Pollock first drip paint, you know, at a workshop that, you know, Siqueiros held. And, you know, we could go on. And Millard Sheets, the regionalist, so many different artists. They were all very much influenced by Mexican artists and the printmakers. And so many people who left the United States because of the racism and went to Mexico. And we could go back in history and just really see, since Mexico got its independence, this very much creative political way of looking at things. And of course, there was always repression. But when it came after the Mexican Revolution, it really was an important time in the world for the what they were trying to create, because there was that movement of labor. And of course, we can't even have, you know, May Day here, but that's all United States history, and there was Mexicans that were involved in all of this. And so that artistic sensibility of really talking about labor and unions, organizing and coming together, that's all part of the history, and that's been written out of history. And even though a lot of artists, American artists, very famous ones, had the same politics. And that's why, you know, so many, not to, you know, put down art critics, but there's a whole mechanism put into place to silence the actual opinions of artists, what they're actually thinking about, and how do we promote these artists, and how do we really erase the much more egalitarian kind of way that they were approaching the works.
Mm-hmm. For us, the challenge was how to include all these details of the story. It's just thinking about that he spent around 8 months in Los Angeles, and he produced a lot of things during that time. So it was very difficult for us to what to include, and so we focused more on this idea of this continuum of censorship and whitewashing, like this tendency to keep that in place. So we ended up, like, not including all the history. It's so complex. In just 8 months, he did a lot. I think you can tell us a little bit more. It's so complex.
I mean, I should also mention, he was asked to be a judge for the Olympics. The Olympics used to have an art competition as well.
What?
So he was in an official capacity working for the U.S. government.
Just but any kind of art, or like?
People entered the different countries. There was an art competition, and he was one of, and there's a picture of it in, I think, Philip Stein's book, where he's among the judges, and he's conferring different awards to, and I think his was fine painting, fine art. To say something about the block of mural painters that were working with him in the different workshops, even when he was deported, they did continue. It was very short-lived. They had the John Reed Clubs in Los Angeles were a communist center, and they did have lectures. They had about four or five different members of his block of mural painters. They did continue in his line of work. They did cement frescoes, portable cement frescoes, these very huge, heavy frescoes on the Scottsboro Boys and the trial that was occurring at the same time. And the night before it was supposed to open, the Red Squad came in and shot at the eyes of all and the bodies of all of the figures depicted. And that very much kind of the group didn't continue much after that. Los Angeles in 1932, we're still reeling from the Great Depression. The WPA program is going to start working through. There are lots of ways in which the city, the artists that he impacted directly in his through the Disney artists that were working there, the scene graphic people that were working there in the studios, they did carry on his legacy. They weren't necessarily Jackson Pollock, you know, level, but for an art critic, this is, you know, they're not going to treat every artist, but his legacy did have an immediate impact on not just the Chicano community that happened much later in the 60s, but it did live on. It just had to morph itself because LA was anti-union, and a lot of the commission projects for murals that were happening were commissioned through the city and the state. So if you don't have private donors, you don't have people giving you money to so you can live, because artists have to live as well, the murals that are being created have largely restricted themes. So he did have an impact, and it did go beyond the art critical heroes and kind of monuments. But you just, you know, you saw them in the Disney backgrounds, or you saw them in the, you know, the kind of landscapes that were being done. But I think it should be noted that there were these hidden histories that nobody knows about, that there was a Red Squad for the LAPD, and they did attack art. That art was that powerful that they felt they had to machine gun it. I mean, that's saying something. They didn't do that to the mural, but they did it as soon as he left.
We have time for one more question.
Hi. We were the architects for the shade structure and the interpretive center there. And I think what's kind of interesting about it is that it's a layering of history. So, for instance, one of the things that we looked at was how to put a structure in that location. And there were many iterations. We even had a version of it that was like scaffolding, that was right up against the mural. We eventually came to the conclusion that we had to have an observation deck that was like four buildings back, because they wouldn't accept the structure to have people get closer to it and to give it a perspective. In addition, the supports for that cloud-like shade that we wanted to just float over it and not dominate it, but be almost ephemeral, was to go down through the building, down into deep history, and the Zanja Madra, which is the original water pipe made out of brick, as a brick circular pipe that brought the water into the city. So there's so many layers in that particular location that are resonating through time. And I think that that's sort of one of the things that was sort of opened up by this. And I'm talking to Leslie in terms of the issue of how to restore the mural. Initially, when we saw that, it was much fainter than it is now. And what they did was they looked at, so if they had one dot of color and another dot of color, they would put the intermediate dot in between, because they felt like they didn't have enough information to know what colors and how to repaint it. So it was much better to, because there was no good, accurate color photograph or color rendering of what the mural looked like when it was first painted. So rather than pretending that they knew, it was to just amplify what was there. So that was part of the process that we were looking at. And then in the interpretive center, a lot of the history that all of you have been talking about became a way of amplifying the information on that. So, thank you.
Thank you. All right, well, Rebecca, Oscar, Jose Luis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For this wonderful film.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.